All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 9. And this morning we're going to do text 14 and 15, because 14 does not have a purport. So I'll chant 14 by myself and just read the translation, and then we'll do 15 together.
Shriyatrarupin yurugaya padayo karoti manam bahuda vibhutibi prankham shritaya kusamaksaro anugra prankham shritaya kusamakara nugair vigiyamana priya karma gayati.
Translation. The goddess of fortune. Did I do Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya? I did. Okay. Thank you. The goddess of fortune in her transcendental form is engaged in the loving service of the Lord's lotus feet, and being moved by the black bees, followers of spring, she is not only engaged in variegated pleasure, service to the Lord, along with her constant companions, but is also engaged in singing the glories of the Lord's activities.
Dadarsha tatra kila satvatam pati. Dadarsha tatra kila satvatam pati. Shriya patim yagya patim jagat patim. Shriya patim yagya patim jagat patim. Sunanda Nanda Prabalarhanabdibi. Sunanda Nanda Prabalarhanadibi. Swaparshad Dagrai Parisevitam Bibu. Swaparsha dagrais parisevatam vibhu. Dadarsha tatra kila satvatam pati. Shriyapatim yagyapatim jagatpatim. Sunandananda prabhavalahanibhi. Svaparshada grair parisevitam vibhu.
Others?
Dadarshatatra kila sanfatam patem. Shriyapatem yagyapatem jagapatem. Banda banda prabala hanadibi. So parsha da grai parisevitam
Vaishnavis. Sunandanadam prabalarhanadibi Subharshadagrai parisevitam vibhum Didarsha Brahma Soa Tatra there in Vaikuntha Loka Akila entire Satvatam of the great devotees Patim the Lord Shriya of the goddess of fortune Patim the Lord Yajna of sacrifice Patim the Lord Jagat of the universe Patim the Lord Sunanda Sunanda Nanda Nanda Prabala Prabala Arhana Arhana Adibi by them Swaparshada own associates Agrai by the foremost Parisevatam being served in transcendental love Vibhum the great almighty Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Lord Brahma saw in the Vaikuntha planets the personality of Godhead, who is the Lord of the entire devotee community, the Lord of the goddess of fortune, the Lord of all sacrifices, and the Lord of the universe. And it was served by the foremost servitors like Nanda, Sunanda, Prabala, and Arjuna. His immediate associates. Purport. When we speak of a king, it is naturally understood that the king is accompanied by his confidential associates, like his secretary, private secretary, aide-de-camp, ministers, and advisors. So also, when we see the Lord, we see him with his different energies, associates, confidential servitors, etc. So the Supreme Lord, who is the leader of all living entities, the Lord of all devotee sects, the Lord of all opulences, the Lord of sacrifices and the enjoyer of everything in his entire creation, is not only the Supreme Person, but also is always surrounded by his immediate associates, all engaged in their transcendental loving service to him. Om Aginatam Ananda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Namilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gudave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dharati Swaparantikam. So this is Sugadev Goswami speaking to us. He's describing the mercy that Lord Brahma received. Krishna was pleased with his non-deceptive penance, and as a result, he revealed to him certain things about the spiritual world. And Sugadeva Goswami is describing this to Maharaj Bricket in response to a whole lot of questions that he asked in the previous chapter, like about, I think, Arjun Gopa counted them, 25 or something like that. And he's not, you know, going systematically. Well, he's systematically, but according to his own logic, he's just describes how, after he heard all the questions, he kind of, you know, thought about it and then decided, okay, here's my presentation. You know, he's not answering like the first, here's the answer to the first question, here's your answer to the second question. He's answering them all. He's going to cover everything. He's going to answer all Maharaj Prickett's questions, but he's doing it in the way he kind of sees fit. So that's part of a conversation. Maharaj Prickett is asking questions, Sugadev Goswami's answering. And that's pretty much what's been going on for the whole second canto here, since the beginning of the second canto. Although there was different sections here, we heard a lot from Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma speaking to Narada Muni, and that's because at one point in his questions, Maharaj Prickett started asking Sukadeva Goswami about the process of creation. So Sukadeva Goswami, he made a lot of statements from his own understanding and realization. But at one point, towards the end of a chapter called The Process of Creation, he, in order to further elaborate on the subject, he did what all the bona fide acharyas do. He referred to a precedent. In other words, he said, you know, actually, is more about this. It was spoken to by Lord Brahma to Narada Muni, who, and Lord Brahma heard from Krishna himself, Garbhadaksha Vishnu himself. So let me relate that to you. And then that chapter is called The Cause of All Causes, and that's where Narada Muni says to Lord Brahma, hey, are you the original? Because I see you meditating on somebody else, so wait a second. This isn't my, And then Lord Brahma said, no. I'm not the original supreme cause. There's somebody greater than me. Anyway, so that's all in the second canto here. And if you remember, the second canto, starts off with Maharaj Parikshit asking Sukadeva Goswami some questions because he's just arrived. He's just arrived at the place, the bank of the Ganges where Maharaj Parikshit is sitting with the determination to fast until death. Right, and he's wanted to do it exactly the right way. He's wanted to achieve self-realization. And if you remember, what happened was like a lot of sages arrived there. A lot of sages arrived upon the scene, and they were suggesting to him, "Well, maybe you should do this. Maybe you should do that." Because he asked this question: "What is the duty of a person about to die?" Anyway, it was decided that he would hear the Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami. And this is all being explained to us we're learning about this from Suta Goswami, who's describing all this to the sages of Naimisharanya. And so this is the second time the Srimad Bhagavatam is being spoken. The first time was actually when Sukadeva Goswami spoke to Maharaj Parikshit. And we're learning about it secondhand. I don't know if that's correct way to say it, but we're learning about this via Suta Goswami, who's describing this to the sages of Naimisharanya, who are performing a 1,000-year sacrifice for the satisfaction of the Lord and his devotees. And we learn about that from Srila Vyasadeva. In the first four verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the spokesman is Srila Vyasadeva himself. So that's kind of, a bit of a background information. And one might ask, what is the reason, what is the reason why these sages have assembled at this place, Naimisharanya, in order to perform a 1,000-year sacrifice? Prabhupada points out in a purport where he talks about that that's not an easy thing to do. They were doing that at great personal inconvenience, because they had a reason why they were doing that. It wasn't just entertainment. It wasn't like this is what the sages do, the equivalent of going out to a movie or something like that. No. They had a serious purpose in mind for why they wanted to perform that 1,000-year sacrifice. And I'm going to, since it's a very short purport, I'm going to read a paragraph from the text where Prabhupada talks about this. So Prabhupada says, and this is an explanation of what's going on at that sacrifice that's written. This is a chapter. This is first canto, chapter 1, in the purport to text 4. Thank you. Yeah. Third paragraph, actually. So Prabhupada says, the great sages are always anxious to do good to the people in general. And as such, the sages headed by Shonaka and others assembled at this holy place of Naimisharanya with a program for performing a great and continuous chain of sacrificial ceremonies. Forgetful men do not know the right path for peace and prosperity. However, the sages know it well, and therefore, for the good of all men, they are always anxious to perform acts which may bring about peace in the world. They are sincere friends to all living entities, and at the risk of great personal inconvenience, I guess that's what I was referring to, they are always engaged in the service of the Lord for the good of all people. Lord Vishnu is just like a great tree. So the reason I read that is because that's exactly what we're supposed to be cultivating that mentality. We're supposed to be trying to follow in the footsteps of the sages of Naimisharanya and all the descendants, which is, the parampara, the disciplic succession. We're supposed to be thinking like this. So then it goes on to say that Lord Vishnu is just like a great tree. And all others, including the demigods, men, siddhas, charanas, vijitharas, and other living entities, are like branches, twigs, and leaves of that tree. By pouring water on the root of the tree, all the parts of the tree are automatically nourished. Only those branches and leaves which are detached cannot be so satisfied. Detached branches and leaves dry up gradually despite all watering attempts. Similarly, human society, when it is detached from the personality of Godhead, like detached branches and leaves, is not capable of being watered. And one attempting to do so is simply wasting his energy and resources. So Prabhupada's saying here that human society today is barking up the wrong tree. You know, barking up the wrong tree. It's a very expression. And the meaning of that expression, barking up the wrong tree, is to be pursuing a mistaken or misguided line of thought or course of action. And that is exactly what human society today is doing. They're pursuing a mistaken or misguided line of thought or course of action by misidentifying the body as the self, you know, not understanding that the spiritual importance of human form of life. So then Prabhupada just goes on to say, modern materialist society is detached from its relation to the Supreme Lord. And here's the result. All its plans which are being made by atheistic leaders are sure to be baffled at every step. And we just kind of see in this day after day after day after day, you know, if nothing else, one of the strongest realizations I get in Krishna consciousness is the one that Kali Yuga is progressing. I may not be understanding so much how, you know, I'm not the body or I'm not how waking my life, but definitely I'm seeing on a regular daily basis practically how Kali Yuga is progressing, because I don't want to do it, but if you just, you know, just pop on the news or something like that, you just, every day, it's just some new major crisis, and it's just completely bears out what Prabhupada's saying here, that all the plans which are being made by the atheistic leaders are being baffled at every step, every day, at every step, every day. Yet they do not wake up to this. So that's our job, you know. Our job is to, we got to first wake up ourselves and then wake them up, you know, try to help them understand, hey, this is it. You're barking up the wrong tree. You're never going to be happy like that. Society is never going to be successful like, you know, with the way you're thinking and the way you're living. Never going to work. So that's our mission. We're supposed to be doing that. Prabhupada says in the last paragraph, it says, in this age, the congregational chanting of the holy names of the Lord is the prescribed method for waking them up. The ways and means are most scientifically presented by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and intelligent persons may take advantage of his teachings in order to bring about real peace and prosperity. Srimad Bhagavatam is also prescribed for the same purpose, and this will be explained more specifically later in the next text. So, you know, book distribution is also prescribed for the same purpose. That's the way I understand that sentence. So the congregational chanting, of course, prasadam distribution of Prabhupada's books, it's all meant for waking up the human society, to try to divert them from their suicide course, which is what as Kali Yuga progresses. This is, after all, this, you know, we're in the Kali Yuga. This is lasts for 432,000 years. We're 5,000 years into it. There's 427,000 years left. But we're told by Prabhupada that there's supposed to be what's called like a golden age of Lord Chaitanya, right? Everybody's heard that. And once devotees asked Prabhupada, where's that from? And he said, Puranas. And he wasn't exactly sure, but, you know, he confirmed that it was something bona fide and Vedic. So there's supposed to be like a window of opportunity for spiritual life to flourish, which started 500 years ago with the advent of Lord Chaitanya. So that was a little over 500 years ago now. So there's still like 9,500 years left. So we're supposed to do everything we possibly can, you know, while we, you know, to try to give these human society an opportunity to see the light and take up Krishna consciousness, because after that 9,500 years period elapses, and that's it. It just plummets downhill very rapidly. Okay, so getting back to today's verse, that was just like a, you know, overview of what's going on here. So talking more specifically about today's verses, so this is, you know, it's talking about, this is a description of Vaikuntha. And so, you know, sometimes there's a tendency among devotees to, at least I know I do this in my mind, especially I just finished reading Krishna book a couple of weeks ago, so I hear a description of Vaikuntha and I think, yeah, that's just Vaikuntha, you know. I don't know. We're interested in Goloka Vrindavan, you know, we're interested in, you know, Patsalya Ras and, you know, Shakya Ras, the more intimate Shakya Ras and Madhurya. What is it? You know, Vaikuntha. Okay. No, I think it's an incorrect way to think, you know. The big thing is we got to understand we're conditioned souls. We don't want to be conditioned souls. I mean, sometimes devotees get confused. They could say, well, Lord Chaitanya said, you know, mama janmani janmanishvade, I'll take birth at birth. But he wasn't talking about doing that and staying a conditioned soul. You know, he said, yeah, I have no desire to accumulate wealth. I have no desire to enjoy beautiful women. I have no desire to, what's the other one? Have many followers. I only want your causes devotional service, birth after birth. So one could misunderstand that, thinking that, oh, well, Lord Chaitanya is saying it's okay. You know, you take birth after birth, you know, as long as you're engaged in devotional service. But he wasn't, I don't think he was, and I'll give my evidence in a second. I don't think he was doing that, suggesting that it's okay to be a conditioned soul, you know, engaged in devotion. No, because in the very next statement, in the very next prayer of the Shashashtakam, he says, Ainanda tanujakin karam, patitam mam vishame bhavambudo, kripaya tavapada pankaja, stita duli sadvasam vachintaya, O son of Maharaj Nanda Krishna, I'm your eternal servitor. Yes, somehow or other, I've fallen to this ocean of birth and death. He says, please pick me up from this ocean of death and place me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. He doesn't say, please just leave me in this ocean of birth and death and let me keep engaging me in devotional service. He wants to get out of the ocean of birth and death. See, so, you know, okay, if you want to be in the material world birth after birth to engage in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, yeah, but not as a conditioned soul. We don't want to remain here as conditioned souls. That's, you know, definitely. So, in other words, If you get a chance to get a spot in Vaikuntha, grab it. This is a very elevated thing to, you know, the Vaikuntha locus. You know, it's not something to be thought of like, oh, you know, just Vaikuntha. We're interested in Goloka Vrindavan. No, don't forget Bhishmadev. He's one of the 12 Mahajans, Bhishmadev, and he wanted to go. His worshipful deity was Lord Narayan. Matter of fact, when he was on his deathbed and Krishna and the Pandavas came to see him, he requested Krishna to show him his four-armed Narayan form. So, you know, he can't poo-poo that, you know, that kind of, that level of Vaikuntha realization. In a conversation, Prabhupada was asked about this, and, you know, Prabhupada, he said, yeah, that's rasa. You know, somebody wants to see the Lord as Narayan. And he gave the example of Bhishmadeva. He said, somebody wants to see the Lord as Ramachandra. He gave the example of Hanuman. And, of course, there are other examples from Chaitanya Leela. That's the Murari Gupta. Well, he is Hanuman. And there was also that the brother, I think he was the younger brother of Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, Anupam. He also was a Ram Bhakta. And I think there was a couple others. I can't remember off the top of my head. But, yeah, that's okay. You know, that's rasa. So, in other words, very exalted, you know, like thing that we're hearing about here. Of course, it is true that, you know, when Krishna left the rasa dance and he was trying to hide, and the gopis were coming and looking for him, so he, and the gopis kind of right hot on his tail, so he was sitting someplace and he manifested himself as Narayan with four arms. And when the gopis came and they saw Narayan, they okay, Narayan. Well, namaste, Narayan. Could you tell us where's Krishna? They weren't attracted to Narayan. They wanted to see Krishna. You know, so unlike Bhishmadeva is seeing Krishna and he's asking, let me see Narayan. But the gopis, they're seeing Narayan and they're saying, Narayan, can you tell us where Krishna is? So, Hare Krishna. But, and it's also interesting that when Krishna was, in his Narayan form, when Radharani came, he was so attracted that he couldn't maintain that form of four-handed form of Narayan. When in the presence of Radharani, he had to kind of like, it's me, it's Krishna, you know. So, this is rasa tattva, you know. Anyway, we won't talk more about that, but it's interesting. So, but anyway, his point, that we're not meant to be like gourmet, rasa tattva gourmet connoisseurs. And I was like, I think our business is to be focused in on what Prabhupada was focused in on, and that's the preaching. And that's how I started the class. You know, I read that paragraph from the first canto there, where the sages of Naimisharanya and all the predecessor acharyas, down, coming down to Prabhupada, they were absorbed in the preaching. They were absorbed in how to wake up the fallen conditioned souls, the sleeping conditioned souls. That was Prabhupada's emphasis. I'll give you an example of that. This is, just be honest with you, I was just for the heck of it, I went onto the internet the other day and I looked up existence of God and I read the Wikipedia, article about that. So it was talking at one point in it about what was called a transcendent argument, the transcendental argument. And it was an argument, I found something that, here we go. Basically, getting right to, Prabhupada was a philosopher. Prabhupada was a theologian. In other words, in his lectures, Prabhupada presents a lot of arguments that are standard theological arguments or standard philosophical arguments. When he does it, he doesn't say, "Oh, this is the argument for, this is the teleological argument, or this is the ontological argument, or this is the." No, he just, goes right in there. He dives right in there. So this is an example of Prabhupada doing that. This is an excerpt from a lecture Prabhupada gave in 1966 in New York. So, once again, my point in reading this is just to show you how this is just one of many, 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 many examples one could give of Prabhupada, the philosopher, Prabhupada, the theologian, Prabhupada, preaching and trying to present arguments to defeat atheism and, establish God consciousness. So, in this one, he goes. So, avijananti means deride. Any person who does not believe in God, he must be either a madman or a foolish man, number one. Any person who does not believe in God, then Prabhupada goes, there is no reason that we cannot believe in God, and there is every reason to believe in God. Suppose you are saying that I don't believe in God, Prabhupada goes, but who has given you this power to say that I don't believe in God? You are speaking, I don't believe in God, but as soon as there is, as soon as you cannot speak, everything stops. So who has given you this speaking power that you dare to say that I don't believe in God? Why don't you think of that? How are you speaking? Who has given you the power? Do you mean to say that this power of speaking comes automatically from stone? This body is like a stone. As soon as the speaking's power is withdrawn by the supreme authority, then you're like stone. Your body is like stone. What is the meaning of this body? So who has given you the speaking power that you are denying that I don't believe in God? Therefore, an atheist or an unbeliever, he must be a first-class foolish man. There is no other reason that one can deny the existence of God. It is very simple reasoning. Those who have who has given you the power to talk, and who, if he withdraws the power from you, then what is your value? How can you boastfully say that I don't believe in God? This very power of speaking is the proof that there is the greatest authority who gives you everything. So that's just like one example, and there's like dozens and dozens of examples of Prabhupada coming in, making different arguments and preaching, trying to convince us initially, and then everybody else, that God exists, Krishna is God, etc. So that was Prabhupada's focus, and that should be, following in his footsteps, that should be our focus. And Prabhupada was very pleased when devotees, his followers, his disciples, kind of imbibed that spirit. Like, he was very pleased when Bhakti Swarup Damodar came out with that book, Krishna Consciousness, the basis of, how's it going? Scientific basis for Krishna Consciousness. He was very pleased by that because Prabhupada read it and he could see, he's using what I've taught him and he's trying to now use that information and present that to, preach to the science community like that. And he was very pleased with Hamsa Duda. There's that famous incident where he was having this, a debate with this Dr. Kavor or something like that. And then, he went back and forth, and finally Hamsa Duda, he wrote him a letter, and in the letter he used all these arguments that he had heard from Prabhupada, and boom, 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 presenting it. So Prabhupada was very pleased with it. That was actually one of the reason why he was appointed to be one of the gurus. Actually, and Prabhupada said when after he was made aware of that, he put his name on the list because he was so pleased by his bold and enthusiastic preaching. And then another one that I'm aware of is in 1976, Prabhupada met with all the BI, the Bhaktivedanta Institute science devotees. Sorry. And at that time, Sataputta was presenting a slideshow. And he was making this point. This is the final point he was making, that things of very high complexity, beauty, sophistication, they can't come from simple, they can't be developed from simple, very simple laws. They have to, come from things equally complex or more complex. So anyway, so Prabhupada appreciated the point, and Prabhupada quoted the verse. He really, he appreciated it. My disciple is, thinking and understanding this philosophy. And so Prabhupada, in response, he quoted that verse, Maya Jakshena Prakriti Suyatesa, like that. And so then Sataputta went on to show the next slide, and that was he had quoted that same verse. So Prabhupada was so pleased, at that point, let me just read this a couple sentences to you, that, he could see, okay, my disciple is studying this philosophy and this understanding. So Prabhupada goes, here is Vasudeva Savamiti. Find out this verse. This is Vasudeva. From him, everything is coming. That is real knowledge. So Harisari, he says, I began to read out the verse which says that after many births, a person who is in actual knowledge, a great soul, a Mahatma, surrenders to Krishna, knowing him to be the source of everything. Such a person is very rare. But before I finished the first line, Prabhupada interrupted. It is conclusion, Vasudeva Savamiti. So you are a Mahatma, Sudurlabha, not ordinary rascal mathematician, but you are a real mathematician. That Vasudeva Savamiti Samahatma Sudurlabha. So Prabhupada was very pleased when he saw his disciples, as I said, were following in his footsteps and, taking on the that responsibility to try to preach and, convince people. And, it wasn't that he was just happy when somebody was like a devotee didn't have to be a big scholar for that purpose either. He was happy when he saw, pleased when he saw, just in general, that a devotee had imbibed that preaching spirit and enthusiasm towards that. Another example that comes to mind, there was this devotee, he was just like a regular devotee. He wasn't one of the big leaders or anything like that, but he had the opportunity to go on a morning walk with Prabhupada. So the morning walk was going along, and this one of the, kind of devotees, part of the inner circle, was talking to Prabhupada and, kind of having a conversation. The conversation was about rasas, and, he was asking him questions about the gopis and rasas. And Prabhupada was answering, but he wasn't, he didn't seem to be kind of like really fired up about it, but he was answering. And it was just going along like that. And devotees could feel that, Prabhupada's not really getting into this, So this one devotee, he was feeling like, nah, this is not going right. Prabhupada doesn't seem to be pleased by this conversation, the way this is going. And also he wanted to get some acknowledgement from Prabhupada. So he thought, well, this is my chance, I got to take a risk here, So he pushed himself up to the front of the crowd there, and he blurted out, Prabhupada! And he got everybody's attention. And everybody was kind of shocked, and they looked, and they said, when he saw he had, everybody stopped, and he had their attention. He goes, Prabhupada, we're going out to the airports, and we're distributing your books, and we're doing, this book and that book, and, we're going out really early. And, he just kind of like emoted for about 30 seconds to a minute, trying to describe to Prabhupada all their preaching activities and the results, and then he just finished, and he ran out of things to say, and he just stood there. And everybody was like dead silence because nobody knew how to react. And this devotee, because like of the intensity of emotion he was feeling, every ounce of blood he had in his body went up to his head and his face at that time. You know, he's like a bright red, you know, standing there like praying, "Oh, please say something," you know, because he didn't know if it was, you know, good or not. And everybody was quiet. No devotee said anything. And then Prabhupada was, you know, paused and he looked around. He looked around at all the devotees and he went, "That is my real disciple. That is my real disciple." See, because, you know, it's because he'd understood, you know, that, you know, he was talking about preaching and distributing Prabhupada's books. And he's, you know, "That is my real disciple." So he was pleased. And that devotee is actually sitting here. That was our temple president. Did I tell the story correctly? Haribo. did I tell the story correctly? Yeah, so, you know, it's kind of like the main thing is to have that spirit, that preaching spirit. If you can do it as a big scholar, wonderful. And if you can do it just as like a rank and file soldier, that's also glorious. But the main point is that we should be in that mood. We should have that, you know, missionary spirit. We should, you know, of like we got to become Krishna conscious, of course. That was like a given, you know, but above and beyond that, we should try to cultivate this attitude, a mood of trying to give it to other people. That's, you know, that was Prabhupada's mood, you know. One other thing was, like, I remember hearing Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he was disappointed at one point. I heard it said he was disappointed because none of his disciples were coming up big preachers, you know. He felt that there were a lot of Kanista Adhikaris, so he was disappointed by that. So, anyway, so that's, you know, something we could think about. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have anything they'd like to say about any of these various and sundry points that I made? Okay, thank you very much. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Huh? I don't know where I got it, but I got it. Oh.